And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy. How are you today?
So you're on Rick Barnes' watch like everybody else there on Rocky Top?
Oh, my God, Mike. I mean, it is just, it has been a stressful 24 hours here. Last night, you know, we got the news that Rick's probably going to UCLA. We got Phil Fulmer meeting him. We got all these Twitter heads coming out with fake news talking about it's a done deal. It's just, it's miserable. And, you know, I'm getting it from everywhere. I don't even want to get on Twitter. Yeah, I go to work. People, that's all they want to talk about. And then when I come home, it's just text messages like, what the hell is Rick doing? You know, he's praying about it. So I'm like, you know, it's driving me nuts, and I know it's a big decision. I don't really know what's going on, but there's nothing coming out, so we don't know exactly where this goes. And I'm trying to be healthy. You know, I'm trying to quit the beers, and you know, and then Rick does something like this.
He's driving you to drinking.
Driving me to drinking again, man. This water ain't cutting it. There ain't enough proof in this water, man.
Well, that may be the big news there on Rocky Top, Shane, but did you hear the big news out of Texas? Johnny Manziel has changed his name.
Oh, my God. What is it now? P. Diddy? J. Diddy?
Oh, the artist formerly known as Johnny Football was on the Dan Patrick Show on Monday. Let's cut to this clip, and then we'll discuss it.
Johnny Manziel, Heisman Trophy winner, former NFL player, played in the CFL and then had a little bit of time in the Alliance of American Football, but now that league has disbanded, and Johnny joins us now. Good morning, Johnny. How are you?
Good morning, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing.
I got a little update for you, but I actually go by John these days, so you know, I'm just kind of turning over the page and moving forward a little bit.
Okay, is this breaking news that Johnny Manziel is no? You're the artist formerly known as Johnny Manziel. All right.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's what they say.
John Manziel joining us on the program.
All right, Shane. So old Johnny, he's dropped the NY. He's just John Manziel, and the way I figure it, John Manziel's never gotten his shot at the NFL. He's never blown that opportunity. What do you think about this one?
Yeah, maybe if you change your name and they Google you, you can't, you know, you're going to get better results or something. I don't know. I just, whatever, Johnny. I mean, we're going to be talking about this kid till we retire, man. It just feels like, you know, it's like Johnny's just always going to be in the news. And what sucks is he's not capitalizing on it, it feels like, you know. He should be more involved with the media because obviously the football is not working. But people recognize him, and I mean, he's on all these shows and stuff. He really needs to create himself a little brand here and try to, you know, make some money off this.
Yeah, I mean, the dude's only 26 years old, I believe. So, I mean, he's still got potential.
Absolutely. I mean, you kicked out of the NFL. You kicked out of Canada. The AAF just shut the door, like, when you got there. You know, you were supposed to be the saving grace. And it's just like, dude, this ain't it. You know, you've had a good run. Let's go to phase two. Let's see what else we can do with this, you know?
Texas A&M assistant coach. I can see it now.
Oh, man. Do you think they'd have him back?
Yeah, Jimbo's embraced him. They come there for the pro days and whatnot. I think not as a full-fledged assistant, but mm-hmm. I honestly think they'd have him as some kind of GA something. I think why the hell not?
Yeah, I could see, and commentating, you know, he's got a pretty good voice. I mean, you hear it on this interview that he was doing, and, you know, he could probably do something, you know, start out small. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, we wasted enough time about Manziel. Yeah. Let's go around the league, huh?
Let's do it.
Now let's go around the league. We hadn't decided how we're going to play the guys, so, and I wouldn't tell you if I did. So, you know, I don't mind you asking a question, but I don't need to answer it.
No, I mean, I'll be whistling Rocky Top by the end of the week, all our players. I mean, it's just like, right? I mean, just hear it over and over, and, you know, like every other or every third song, it'll roll through within the crowd noise that we play at practice, so you just get used to it. And it's a catchy tune, right? I mean,
this game's going to be a street fight. This game's going to be a street fight. I mean, some of you guys don't know who Kimbo Slice is. Hopefully you do. And you go back to it, man, this isn't a sanctioned fight. This is a street fight. I mean, this is the SEC. So, man, it's time. It's time to put on the hard hat. Launch bail. Let's get to work.
All right, Shane, starting in Tuscaloosa.
Roll Tide!
A little bit the latest Nick Saban rant came this weekend. He went off, Shane. He was asked about, you know, all these early departures to the NFL and how his program didn't really have to deal with that, obviously, when he first got there because they didn't have this elite talent. But now, obviously, he does. And they just had 7 guys declare early for the NFL, the most ever under Nick Saban there at Alabama. And that really ticked Nick Saban off. He went on quite the rant. We're going to play this whole rant here, and then we'll discuss it.
I think there's no question that it's different, but I don't think it's any different here than it is every place else. Now, we've had this conversation, I think, before, but I don't know. I don't really look at it. I've heard 135 guys. I had 142 guys went out early for the draft. I do know there's some pretty compelling stats out there about guys going out early for the draft. I think in the last 5 years, not counting this year, there's been 380 players or thereabouts go out early for the draft, and 25% of those guys didn't even get drafted. And another 25% weren't on a team in 3 years. So that means 50% of the guys that went out early for the draft had failed careers. But if you look at the number of guys that were first and second round draft picks, there were very few guys that had failed careers. Now we have guys that have no draft grade, seventh round grades, free agent grades, fifth round grades that are going out for the draft. And, you know, the person that loses in that is the player. You know, you got your third round draft pick. And we had one here last year, I'm not mentioning any names, goes and starts for his team, so he's making third-round money, which is not that great. Be the first guy taken in his position this year, probably, and make $15, $18 million more. So the agent makes out, the club makes out, now they got a guy that going to play for that kind of money for 3 more years. All right, and everybody's out there saying, we'll get to your next contract. Well, there's obviously a pretty 50% of these guys are never getting to a next contract. And that doesn't mean all the rest of them got to one either. So it's the culture and it's the trend. And, you know, I've actually changed how I talk to recruits now. You know, I tell every recruit that I talk to, the reason that you're going to college is to prepare yourself for the day you can't play football. I think we have a lot of people way back in high school, right, that look at college as a conduit to get to the NFL. And look, I am 100% NFL. I'm 100% guys having careers. Right, but people have to be smart about the business decisions they make relative to the NFL because it is all business. And when people make emotional decisions, they're going to have to suffer some really difficult consequences for their self in the future, because you don't have to go out for the draft early. You can come back and play. We've had 6 or 7 guys here that had second and third round grades that became top 15 and first round draft picks and made a significant amount of money doing that. So there's some really good examples of guys that did it that way. And, you know, so I just, and look, I'm all for every one of our guys that went out for the draft. I'm going to do everything I can do to try to get them drafted as high as they can get drafted. All right, because once they say they're leaving, what benefits our program is that they do great. And I want them all to do great. But I don't think that not just our players, there's a significant amount of players that are not making good business decisions about what they do. And, yeah, it affects our team, but our team turns over more quickly. We just have to have more better young guys that can go out there and learn how to play and provide depth to the team. And it's not going to be an excuse for what kind of quality we put on the field. We just got to do a better job of coaching because we got to do a better job of developing young players because they're going to have to play more quickly.
All right, Shane. Now, he didn't throw old Ronnie Harrison under the bus there, but that's exactly who he was talking about. I mean, you can't give that much information and then just say, well, hell, I'm not going to say his name. I mean, people are going to figure it out pretty easily there.
Dude, he said, I'm not going to say who it is, but he was a third-round pick. Well, if you, a quick Google search, you'll realize Alabama only had one third-round pick last year, so it did not take long to figure out who he was talking about. But man, he's a little frustrated with the situation. I mean, you know, that's where Alabama's at. That's where these big schools are at right now. You know, they've got these juniors that can go pro. So what are your thoughts on it?
I got a lot of thoughts on it, but I understand where Nick Saban's coming from. And I understand, you know, anytime he says something, most people are like, oh, that asshole, like, to hell with him. I think he comes from a good place because he's obviously an older guy. He's a very wise person. Some people are going to read into this saying, well, he just cares about Alabama football. And while that there is obviously truth to that, you know, I think he's kind of, he's trying to help these guys if they come back, and he believes that more time in his system and his program is going to help their stock. And we've seen that time and time again. He's helped a lot of people, but I would also say that we've seen a lot of his guys, not a high percentage, but several of them, they must live a very, very, very structured life there at Tuscaloosa, and I'm sure that's by design. I mean, these guys, and they have no issues ever at Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as they get to the NFL, and it is probably about, you know, six or seven dudes I'm talking about here. But
Ron, do you think it's because Tuscaloosa is so isolated? I mean, I just curious, you know, I wonder if it matters about the city, you know, because there's always been a kind of like a bad vibe with, let's say, Florida Gators, you know, but Gainesville's a huge city, you know, and it opens up more opportunities. Do you think that has something to do with it? Or do you think just because they are young and dumb and got a full of, you know, got ton of money and just cut loose? Do you think there's... I don't know. It seems like that they are making that they have these classes for these incoming rookies and things to help them prepare for success and monies. But I don't know if maybe there's not enough going into that, you know, or if they're not learning from it. But I don't know.
I think the key there is just basically never having this kind of money in your life,
mm-hmm.
because most people don't. And then just getting it all thrown at you at once and being young and being successful and thinking you're on top of the world, because they basically were up until when they get to the NFL.
Yeah.
And like I said, they don't live in that structured environment. That's where the issues come from.
Well, let's say this, though. Take football out of it for a second. Here you got these kids. Let's say, for instance, you're at an internship and your supervisor comes up to you and says, hey, Mike, you know, stick around here one more year. We're not going to pay you anything. You stick around one more year, we could probably land you one of these sweet gigs and get you, you know, $200,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you could go now. This company will hire you for $100,000. You have potential to move up and even go to those other places, you know, the harder you work and the more you prove yourself. I could see how a lot of people are saying, you know, Saban's a great guy for looking out for his players and getting more money. But what if, you know, John Smith comes back next year and blows a knee and then he doesn't mm-hmm. have that opportunity to go to the league? And that's on you, coach. You know what I'm saying? So,
right.
I agree that there are a lot of circumstances revolving around this. I've seen a lot of teams have players go or say they're going to go to the draft, never get drafted, never hear from them again. You know, I think there needs to be maybe a better evaluation. Like, if you know that there's a good chance you're going to be a late round, potentially not drafted, you know, maybe there's some they can sit these kids down and say, hey, listen, you know, maybe coming back wouldn't be a bad idea for you. Finish your college education, you know, something to fall back on if football doesn't work out for you. But if they go in and they say, hey, you may be a third round pick, well, then, man, I'm not going to fault the guy for going for a third round pick. I would if I had the opportunity.
Yeah, and that's one of the key things I wanted to hit on, because I'm not, well, you know, I didn't want to throw Saban under the bus there. I'm not buying that argument that, hell, he's getting a third round grade or whatever, or fourth round or fifth round. If he comes back, he could be a first round. Yes, that does happen. We're looking at that right now with Kentucky linebacker Josh Allen. I think that was kind of his grade a year ago. It was maybe like third rounder. I don't know the specific round, but it was not a first rounder. And now he may be a top 10 pick. He likely will be. So it certainly can happen. But that's a big gamble. You, like you said there, you blow out your knee, you're going undrafted.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a huge risk. And here's another one that I know Saban knows, but he didn't even mention it. And people that don't follow the NFL may not know, and they likely don't factor this in. But if you are a first-round pick, Shane, in the NFL, basically an NFL team owns you for 5 years. Now, you're getting paid. I'm not suggesting they're, you know, anything other. They're getting a lot of money. But the team owns their rights for 5 seasons. Now, if you're a second-round pick, they own your rights for 4 seasons. And then if you go third and later, I believe it is, you are a three years locked up to a deal. And why that's significant? Because after those 3 years, you could sign a max contract, and you could end up making more than the guys that went in the first round and the second round ahead of you. Yeah. So you basically, while you're not going back to Alabama, he's already getting paid. We're talking about Ronnie Harrison, and if he continues to play well, he's that much closer to a huge payday. So,
yeah,
I mean, I don't know. I can't blame him. I mean, he's getting paid. He's producing at the NFL level. Saban says he could have came back and been a higher round pick potentially, but another way I look at it is he's a year closer to hitting that jackpot of hitting that NFL free agency.
Absolutely. It's a gamble whatever way you take. Saban wants to keep these guys on the field. You know, he would love to have five-year seniors, you know, fifth-year seniors, not be able to give out scholarships, just have all the depth he would ever need. That's what he would want, and that's what Alabama fans would want. You know, I'm sure they wish the best for their players when they go to the draft and they're in the NFL. I do that. I root for Tennessee guys in the draft and in the NFL. But I would have loved for Kamara to come back. You know what I'm saying? I would have loved for some of these other guys that we had go to the NFL. Cordero Patterson, you know, stay another year. There was the selfish side of me would want him to come back. And if I can convince him that he may get a better draft spot, if he does that, then I'm going to do that. I mean, he's a salesman. So I say all that to say this, Mike. The opportunities to play at the next level are extremely slim. And I truly believe if you have the opportunity, some of these guys have kids, you know, some of them have families that they want to support. And this was an opportunity for them to get in the NFL. And who's to say, you know, like you're a first round pick, you know, if you're on a team like Alabama, your stock may be a little bit higher because the players around you are a little bit better. I saw this like with Mississippi State last year. I think that's a reason a lot of these guys declared for the draft, because they knew the following year was going to be a struggle. And this was the highest, you know, that they were going to be showcased just because of the talent that was around them on that defense. So I think it was just a perfect opportunity for some of these guys to go to the next level. And does it suck? Yes. But I mean, you got to remember, if you've got, we talked, how many people, 7 went to the draft, juniors?
Quentin Williams was a redshirt sophomore. So,
okay. Yeah. I mean, so we're talking a handful, and this is just Alabama. There, you could take 10 other teams, and they didn't have 7 juniors go to the draft. So, yeah, I mean, it's slim opportunities. You got to take it when you get it.
Yeah, well said, Shane. And I just think, I don't know, Saban's made so much money off a lot of these guys. I just don't think, and I don't think it's right for any of these coaches. You may disagree with a guy's decision. You may tell them why you disagree, and I fully respect all that, but I just don't think it's right to come out publicly and make these comments, because, it, like you said, every situation's different. Yes, there's guys that are probably going to go and not get drafted, but hey, they can sign unrestricted free agent contracts, and they're making more than they would if they came back to school. So I don't know. I just don't think it's any coach's right to say these things personally. And then here, Sarah, we got Ronnie Harrison actually responded. I thought this was great. He responded on Twitter. So here's a tweet that Ronnie Harrison put out. Coaches get so butthurt nowadays about a kid making a decision to live out his dreams and go pro. Makes me think, do you really care about the success of the kid or how well your program performs? So that's pretty rough. And then I don't know if you saw this, Shane, but Lane Kiffin has come out on Monday, and he kind of backed that up saying, hey, if you got a chance to go, you got to go. And you know, there's guys like Matt Barkley, his former USC quarterback, who, you know, they were telling him was going to be a first-round pick. He came back for his senior year. He fell to the, I think it was the fourth or fifth round. So, I mean, if you're getting that grade, I think you got to go.
Yeah, for sure. And Alabama, one thing about Alabama, they got a lot of young talent. What if one of these guys lost their starting position and then now they're not even thought about going into the draft? You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah,
you got to strike while the iron's hot, man, because there's always somebody ready to take your job. There's always variables. Things can happen. If you have an opportunity to go, I don't blame them. Now, blasting the coach, you know, that's I mean, if you look at these comments on this, we'll put it on the Reddit page, but if you look at the comments that are underneath this, it was just a lot of bashing, man. A lot of people, you know, forget they were rooting for this kid on Saturdays. And now he spoke his mind just like Coach Saban did. And we're going to bash him because we disagree with what he said.
Oh, he also said, hashtag, keep my name out your mouth.
I did see that. Maybe, I mean, he probably could have toned it down. He probably could have said some better words himself, but I'm guessing he's not going to be at the spring game Saturday.
All right, Chad, on a lighter note, let's jump down to Gainesville. Dan Mullen met with the media on Monday, and he had his presser. And, of course, Shane, the Gator coach, he cannot go to the podium without calling shots at somebody. And I'm liking these comments from Mullen. This one is a lot more, makes a lot more sense than his last one, so I really appreciated this one. But we're going to cut to Dan Mullen. There's actually two comments I wanted to add here, but the first one, this is kind of important. The Gators, what he goals exiting the spring because of course, the Florida spring game's coming up on Saturday. But then after that, the second comment, he was asked about spring attendance and how important that is, and that's when he takes a shot here at old Florida State.
Well, you know, I mean, you're hoping to see a foundation of guys that are ready to go play, which, you know, you feel there's obviously you feel already feel good about a bunch that, you know, Saturday after probably felt pretty good about those, a bunch of guys before we even started spring practice, that they've played a bunch of football. And you hope, though, that they're continuing to make improvements. For us, the biggest thing is we got to continue to build depth. So hopefully there's, you know, we add some more guys that we feel comfortable that are ready to play, knowing we still have, a summer and 25 more practices.
A lot of people get competitive with spring game attendance.
Yeah.
Might even put their thumb on the scale a little bit, so to speak. Does it matter to you what the attendance is?
No, the more the better for me. And the other reason I say that is because you create the environment. You create an exciting environment for recruiting one, for all the recruits that we have on campus, but also the pressure for the players, you know, because there's a lot of guys that haven't played in front of the crowd before. So there'll be times you're going to roll some guys out there on the field that you want to see. You know, it's one thing when we're on the practice field, and, you know, it's not that big a deal. Or even, you know, scrimmages are a little bit different because you're in the stadium. But now in the spring game, I'm a young player. I get to go in the stadium, and there's a lot of people watching. You know, and that can change the psyche of an 18-, 19-year-old kid. So,
I was talking about the number, too.
Yeah, it'd be great. I don't know. Did we fudge it last year or no? I think ours was legit last year. I do think some. I mean, I know this. I have fudged it before.
Oh, you've had that before?
Well, like for like, not like ridiculously, but for like silly stuff. maybe the attendance matches the score of a certain game or something like that during the season. that we've done that type of stuff before.
One last one.
If you go, 41,014. Yeah, 41,140. Right, or something. I don't know. You kind of do stuff like that, maybe. I don't know. Have some fun.
All right, Shane. So we're always asking for these coaches to get a little bit more entertaining, and it looks like Dan Mullen is stepping up to the plate and becoming one of those guys.
Do you know why, Mike? Because this presser was 22 minutes long. That is more than double any of the other coaches here. This is a great comment. Don't get me wrong. I think that's hilarious. I could see Dan doing something like this. He feels like a prankster. Mm-hmm. You know, I could see Dan, putting saran wrap on the toilet and all this stuff, just giggling and getting the guys going and stuff. That's a Dan move, and it does not surprise me. What I hate about it is for 22 minutes he sat down there, and these reporters pretty much asked about this guy, and then this guy, and then this. I mean, they went to the complete roster. I mean, here you got a coach that's open, and eventually he's going to make a mistake, and it's going to catch the newspaper headline, and this was it, 18 minutes in. But do you know what Saban said at his 18-minute mark?
I would say he didn't even go that long.
He didn't. He was halfway to his lake house by 18 minutes, Mike. So, and these reporters, if they would get a little more creative with their questioning down there, this could be the guy. This could be our Spurrier, where we could get comments just all the time. And of course, if he stays up there for 40 minutes, I guess they're going to eventually catch one.
Well, speaking of Spurrier, Shane, he's like an honorary, I don't want to say coach. I don't know what his title is down there, but he works down there.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to, leave that position for the AAF, and now he's back. Did you hear what he said upon his arrival?
I want my job back. I don't know. What did he say?
Apparently he walked in the door and said, "I'm back, y'all, sooner than you thought." And then he just went into his office.
Without a shirt, just walking around campus. I love it. I think it worked out perfect. I saw somebody tweeted something that about AAF folding right before the Masters, and it had Spurrier dancing. So I think that's where he's going to be this week.
All right, Shane, sticking in the SEC East, let's jump down to Athens.
Oh, dog, sick him!
Kirby Smart met with the media recently, and he didn't have a ton to offer up, but I thought the most interesting comments he had some comments on his defensive line and going up against, obviously, the offensive line that's already being touted as one of the best in the nation. And let's just jump to these comments from Kirby Smart, and then I got a question to ask you on the back end.
Difference makers. I think Tyler Clark's a difference maker when he wants to be, when he's playing really hard and playing quick. In a very unique way, Jordan Davis is a difference maker. I mean, he's not explosive and quick, but he's a mountain of a man, and he's hard to move. And in the SEC, you need a guy like that. Are you saying an elite three technique? Guy that's quick and twitchy. We don't have that right now. No, we're certainly trying to recruit it. But we got some edge guys. And when you count the defensive line, you sometimes count the defensive ends. I thought Nolan played with a high motor today and played really explosive. He's got to get more physical in the run game. But he certainly plays hard. And he's out there because he covers down and makes plays.
High expectations of the offensive line. How did you think that defensive line held up in the scrimmage?
It was hit or miss. I mean, again, I start out with probably disappointing at the beginning, and the defense was playing with more of a chip on the shoulder, and then as the scrimmage progressed into the third down and the red area and a lot of the other situations, the offense asserted itself, especially in the red area. So it can't be that inconsistent for the expectations of what we want our offense to be physicality-wise. We've got to be more consistent doing it. But at times, they did do it.
All right, Shane. So like I said, nothing too, earth-shattering there from Kirby's comments. But I did want to make a note that obviously he's talking about Nolan Smith, once again, the number one high school player in the nation. He's already making some big plays. He stated that on a previous podcast. But the real thing I wanted to ask you here, Shane, how much can this defensive line be expected to grow going up against this offensive line if they just keep getting dominated? I know, obviously, you'd expect them to step up to the level of competition, but maybe that's not even what I'm trying to say here, but how good of a read can Georgia get on their defensive line going up against this offensive line, do you think?
I think when you practice against the best, you become the best yourself. I'm a firm believer of that. Teams like Georgia and Alabama, when they got the ones going against the ones, I think that's why they do so well against these top-tier teams when they come out and start playing at the start of season, just because they're so much more prepared than a lot of other teams. I think the offensive-defensive line is the same. I've said it 100 times. I really do think Georgia's got the best offensive line in the conference, and that only helps the defense, because if you get your ass smoked in practice, you know, and it's June or July, and you're thinking about, man, you know, Mays took me up and down the field, you know, I'm not going to let that happen. I'm as big as he is. I mean, that's going to motivate me to get in that weight room and you know, work on my craft. So when we come back out for fall ball, there's not as much separation. So if they use this right, which they will, I think it's going to be a great motivating tool during the offseason.
Is any concern at all? We're part of it too. We keep hyping up this offensive line. Any concern that maybe they're not as good? Like, if they're just going up against a defensive line that can't match them and they're just overpowering them, you know?
Yes.
And then it turns out that, hell, the defensive line wasn't any count, and that maybe that's why the offensive line was looking so good.
Well, one thing that worries me, if one side's doing better than the other, and this is something Kirby brought up in this press conference, was he was talking about Fromm, about him sitting back there getting bored. You know, this isn't his first rodeo. He knows the offense. He knows the defense. And he knows if they move something, what he needs to do. So it's like he's ahead of the curve because he's been there so long and he's just got a great feel of the game. So, you know, at that point, it's his job to make sure that the little things, kind of like Alabama and Tua talking about the little things became big problems mm-hmm. later. You know, if the offensive line has got some serious captains up front, if they notice something, yes, maybe they got a good block or got lucky and Swift took it off for a touchdown, big explosive play. But if they saw something that could have been corrected, that if they were going against a team like Alabama or LSU or somebody like that and maybe had a better defensive front, then those little mistakes are going to get exposed. So that's where film study comes in, man. You know, when Kirby gets back and he's looking at the film and they break down to their individual groups, that offensive line, even though they may be dominant, I guarantee Pittman's in there saying, okay, this is what you did wrong. This is what you know, he's constantly critiquing them. So if they perfect their art, then hopefully it'll show when the season starts, you know?
Yeah, and I think I'm just trying to nitpick Georgia's roster at this point because I don't think there's going to be many weaknesses. Mm-mm. And they talk about the defensive line maybe not being there. But once again, we've hit on it before. The number one prospect in the nation, number one junior college prospect in the nation. I mean, these guys, they may not be ready right now, but they've got several months to get in that position.
I will tell you, during spring, we've heard it a few times, Kirby talking about the wide receivers. And one of the things he brought up today, which was interesting, I didn't even really think about it, but in spring, you know, an advantage to those early enrollees and the people that are coming back, you know, this is their opportunity to prove that they belong on the first team. And I'm not feeling that vibe when he comes out and he talks about these receivers. But one thing he mentioned is because in fall, when we bring these freshmen in, we're going to have to give them even more reps because we want to see what they can do and how they develop. So these guys may be getting all the ones right now, but when fall comes, even though they may be a contender for the ones, they're going to have these young guys in there trying to see what they've got and try to find the best 11. So I don't know, man. I'm not feeling confident about the wide receivers because, like I said, everything that Kirby says, there's a few things you can pick that he liked, but he was pretty negative about the whole core.
Yeah, well, I just think when that offensive line is mauling people, it's not going to matter if they got no one to throw the ball to.
That's true, man. A great that's what a lot of people don't realize. A great offensive line makes everyone better. I'm not saying that it's the most important position, but I am. I think a quarterback is important, obviously, because they touch the ball every time, but not with Georgia. As much as they run the ball, I think it's all about those big hogs up front. And if they become a solid unit like I think they're going to, it's going to make everyone else around them better, so including the receivers. Because when you go with the play action fake and they got eight in the box, I mean, Fromm is so accurate that he could pick apart, and as long as the guy catches it, they're going to get a positive yard, you know. So I think it all starts with the line, and Georgia should feel pretty good.
All right, Shane, let's jump back to the SEC West. We haven't done Mississippi State in a while. We haven't had much good audio to run here, but we finally got Joe Moorhead after scrimmage there at Mississippi State, and he's talking quarterback, Shane, because obviously Nick Fitzgerald struggled with this offense. Keaton Thompson, for whatever reason, it didn't seem like the coaching staff very high on him. But he's back. He's going to, you know, we've hit on it before. It seems like this is his offense. This is his team. And that's something, you know, Joe Moorhead talks about his progression, but he's quick to note the other quarterbacks here in the spring in Starkville. Let's jump to Joe Moorhead's comments, and then we'll discuss it.
They'll never be where we want them, but I think we are taking strides, and I think, you know, it's kind of all relative to experience. So I think KT has done what we've expected from a quarterback in year two of the offense. Jalen has definitely taken strides forward, in the run game and the pass game, and some of the stuff that you're not seeing with the two quarterback or one quarterback is quarterback run game. That's something where, you know, we we're going to continue to do that, but we want to focus on the things that we feel we need the most improvement. And, you know, Garrett's, he's swimming a little bit just from an understanding and a speed of the game. But he's got a lot of ability and a lot of potential. And I think you see that when sometimes he'll make a throw in practice and it's the complete wrong read, but it's a laser and it's caught and it's a big play. But his thing is just going to be, you know, understanding what's going on. And he's worried about the hows now, and everyone else is worrying about the whats and whys. I'm sorry. How do you coach around it?
When a guy makes a great play, but it's not the right one.
You pat him on the back, you tell him great job, but you explain to him why in the future it probably wouldn't work out well. And that historically, I don't think you want to coach the player out of them, and I think that's some things that particularly quarterback coaches, you know, fall into that trap where you want them to be so ingrained into the assignment, into the footwork, into the read and the throw, you coach some of the ball player out of them. And you know, with Trace and with Nick and, you know, hopefully with these guys, you want to have enough that they understand the system and they're playing within the confines and structure of the scheme, but at the same time give them enough latitude where, you know, sometimes football players just make football plays. So it's a delicate balance, but you definitely don't want to coach them out of it.
All right, Shane. So I don't know. These comments were not very inspiring to me, and I don't know. I hope Moorhead does well there at Mississippi State. Obviously, his offense struggled mightily last year, and he's an offensive guy, and if he can't get this thing going, I don't know that they have a future, you know?
Yeah, I was looking at the comments on this video. I don't usually do that, but I was looking at these. There wasn't that many, and it was like half of them were like, did we make a mistake hiring this guy, you know? And the other ones are like, let's give him time, you know? That's one thing, Joe. He's a tough one to read. You know, he'd be a great poker player, I would think. But he was a little excited about Keaton, talking about him getting a little bit better. But, you know, Joe doesn't light up much, but he kind of lit up a little bit when he was talking about Schrader. He said once the game slows down and he can figure out, and I'm paraphrasing this, when the game slows down, he can progress, do his read progressions and things. He really loves arm strength on this kid. He says there'll be sometimes he'll throw a laser and it gets caught, but what he doesn't realize is he made the wrong read. And this is something, you know, I mean, spring ball, he's young. I think he may have a better feeling of a quarterback situation going into next year, but I still think that this is Keaton's team, you know?
Well, Shane, this is what I was going to drop on you.
Yeah.
I've heard the stats from the spring scrimmage, the weekend there in Starkville.
Yeah.
Keaton Thompson, 7 of 16, so not even 50% for 70 yards.
Mm.
And then this Garrett Schrader, 3 of 6 for 60 and a touchdown. So, I mean, okay. It seems like the freshman, now he did note there that he, like you said, he made one huge play, but it was probably the wrong read, but hell, at least he made it. I don't know. I think there's a chance. Now, maybe I'm just reading way too much into something that happened in the spring here, but the fact that they just have never really been sold on Keaton based on pursuit of graduate transfers and never get, I mean, there was time and time they should have got him on the field last year and they never did.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm thinking that Garrett Schrader is going to be the starting quarterback by season's end.
Well, let me ask you this, Mike. Can you read those stats to me again? Keaton's?
7 of 16
mm-hmm.
for 70 yards.
Okay, so 10 yards a pop. So they're doing about 5 yards more than they did last year. You know, so, but I will tell you, this fan base, and again, like you said, if you listen to fans, you end up sitting with them. I get that. But I don't think Joe wants to be embarrassed like he did last year with his offense. A lot of people thought he was going to be this offensive guru when he came down here, and that's the last thing we saw on that field. So if Keaton does get to start, which I think he will, and again, this is early, but I think he's going to have a lot shorter leash than Nick did last year, you know?
Yeah, definitely, but I don't know. They've got to get that figured out. And like you said, he's offensive guru, but that's because everywhere he's been, literally everywhere he's been, that's been the situation. And it took a little while to get going there at Penn State, and then it exploded.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's – they had a couple games where Nick Fitzgerald just kind of willed them. But beyond that, I mean, they just didn't – they had nothing going for the most
part. Oh, yeah. Well, if you have a guy like Barkley on your team, you know, you'd hope that you would be able to do something with that offense.
Mm-hmm. All right, Shane, let's jump over to the East. Mississippi State's cross-division opponent here. Let's go to Kentucky. World Mark Stoops met with the media here recently and got to start off with this, Shane, because he had his own Coach O moment during his presser.
Felt like we got a lot of good work in today. I was really pleased defensively. I felt like a week ago, just kind of milled around on the field. Didn't have the intensity that we're looking for. This week, different story. Defense came out, really played very dominant up front. We're very physical at the point of attack. We created some turnovers. You know, played a really good scrimmage. So I'm pleased. I knew this was going to happen. Hey, Cody, tell them to keep it down, man.
Coach O's not the only one capable of screaming at players to shut up, is he?
Yeah, Coach O did a little bit better, right? hey, buddy.
That's what Coach of the Year will get you. You're allowed to yell at people during the presser.
Did these guys, you said cross division, it just made me think. I mean, Mississippi State and Kentucky, I mean, what is there? Is there something between them? I got to do some research on that. That may be a history lesson. In the fall, because that has to be one of the most odd, other than South Carolina and Texas A&M, mm-hmm. one of the most odd, division, cross division deals. But anyway, sorry, little rabbit hole there.
But then I thought the most interesting comment here, Shane, from Mark Stoops, we got to talk about this. I mean, I've never heard a coach openly talk about it quite like this, but he said, following the spring, Gunnar Hoke may leave the program, and he's talked to him, you know, this spring. He's talked about how impressive Gunnar's looked, but now he's already talking about Gunnar potentially leaving. So let's jump to these comments.
I'm not sure. I'll sit down with Gunnar next week, and we'll talk about his plans and see what he has, you know, planned. I don't know. I mean, we're working our tail off with him like we always do, and he's doing everything we ask him to do like always. But after the spring, we could always sit down and talk and see what's best for him and his future. And, you know, of course I want Gunnar here, but I'll be very supportive of him, you know, whatever he decides to do.
Now, Shane, I really wanted to play that clip because, I mean, what a situation here. Obviously, Terry Wilson, he had his moments mm-hmm. last year, but if he does not progress as a passer, I mean, there's really only so far they can go with him, I think.
Yeah.
And if Gunnar really has I don't know. I don't know if you can make the switch. I guess that's my question to you, Shane. If Gunner basically says, "Hey, I'm out," because I think I've outperformed this guy and I'm still the backup. I mean, what does Mark Stoops do in that situation?
I don't know, man. And this one caught me off guard. I wasn't expecting just the nonchalant say, "Well, we hope he sticks around." You know, it just. I don't want any of my players thinking that way. If you're thinking that way, we'll talk about it in my office and we'll address it accordingly. Well, first off, you ain't going to be taking any more snaps from my team. I'm going to find out who my backup quarterback is going to be, because Wilson at times last year, I thought should have been benched. And if he has turned the leaf and he is more efficient in the passing game, I think Kentucky will be fine. I think they got a quarterback for two more years, and I could see why somebody like Gunner would want to leave, because he'd never get any playing time. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's a good sign. If you're a Kentucky fan, you're like saying, well, he's on the sideline. He's with Stoops and he's with Wilson, and maybe he's seeing something from Wilson saying, I'm not going to be able to beat this guy out. So you should, I'd like to make a positive out of a negative, because after Gunner, if Gunner leaves, I mean, you've got Woods and two true freshman quarterbacks backing him up. So that's a scary thought with a mobile quarterback.
Yeah, because obviously you kind of hit on it there. He could get hurt at any time. So I don't know. This is a troubling situation with Kentucky trying to get their, they need this offense to go forward. And maybe Terry Wilson just has made that progression, because last year, I don't want to say he's rushed on the field. I mean, they had a great year,
mm-hmm.
but he had only been there a short time. So maybe he really has made such a progression where there is left no doubt we're going to hope Caster transfer. That's a good point. I never thought of that, but I don't know. This is definitely one to be monitoring, because I don't know. Maybe Arkansas can get old Gunner Hoke, get load up on him.
Load up, man. I love it.
All right, Shane, last team I got here, Texas A&M, old fast-talking Jimbo Fisher.
Giga Mag.
Met with the media here recently, and he had himself a little rant, too, even when he was asked. I think he's just getting tired of being asked about Kellen Mond and his progression and how important that is to A&M's program. Let's just jump to this one, and then I got a question to ask you about it.
Well, no. How much depends on 11? Well, let me ask them. If Kellen's efficient, nobody blocks up front, nobody runs a route, and nobody—I mean, you put it on the quarterback all day. We don't understand. Football is an unbelievable team game that people still don't comprehend. And I'm not trashing it, saying that to you, that you can't. Those guys can't do it. But then at the end of the day, you got the ball in your hand, and you got to try to erase those if people make mistakes or not make it disastrous where you throw it away or do things or run it or milk the, those situations. It's on the quarterback. There's no doubt. I mean, he's the main guy who has to do it. But you got to work around him, and you got to be able to. Here's the other thing: he has to find guys that he trusts. He knows will get open, or when he checks the run, what lineman we gonna run it behind, or what back we gonna give it to, or what tight end is gonna make the block or the catch. I mean, it's a two-way street for him to be able to execute. He has to get consistency from those guys, so his game can grow too.
All right, Shane. So you can kind of see what I'm saying there. He's getting the questions about Kellen Mond, and then he starts going off on the rest of the damn team. And here's my question to you, Shane. Do you think, based on what Jimbo Fisher has seen here in spring, I take this as Kellen Mond can only do so much, and maybe the players around him need to step up their game? That's kind of what I'm hearing from Jimbo Fisher in these comments. What about you?
Yeah. Actually, I thought this was one of the best comments we heard today. And the reason is, the quarterbacks, the coaches, maybe some of the receivers, maybe some of the running backs. It seems like cornerbacks. It just seems like those are the guys that have the biggest spotlight, and it's just because they usually are near the ball. But what you don't realize is that, I mean, this is a team effort, and if all 11 aren't doing their job, it's going to make it even harder for the other ones to do theirs. So you're talking about somebody like Mond. If he's throwing going to a receiver and it needs to be a 10 and out, but the guy runs a 12 and out. And Mon threw it exactly where it was supposed to be, but it's picked off. You're going to think Mon messed up. So I think he hit the nail on the head. Again, maybe a good sign. Maybe Mon is there. Maybe he is motivating his team. Maybe he's doing 110% and coach is using this to motivate the other guys to work out just as hard as Mon. That's kind of what it felt like to me.
Yeah, either that or Jimbo's just damn tired of being asked about Kellen Mon.
I tell you what, out of all these pressers, there's a few things I'm tired of hearing about. One, this is one, talking about Mon, South Carolina. The Bentley. I mean, Bentley, we didn't include it, but he had three questions asked to Bentley in his press conference. Two of them were about backup quarterbacks. You know what I'm saying? that's the storylines, and I can see it molding the further along we get here. So I'm looking forward to some media days. I want to see who they go down there. But I guarantee some of these guys are going to be asking the same daggone questions, man.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Well, Shane, that's all I got. You got anything before we hop off here?
No. We did get a ghost review. I don't know who you are, but you do, and I appreciate you. Five-star heart, and if you got yourselves a little iPhone, if you could give us a five-star rating on iTunes, it really does help us out. Appreciate everybody hanging out with us. If you don't have an iPhone, then who cares, man? Just hanging out. Like I said, spring ball. We still got some content, man. It feels good, but boy, we're about to hit the dark days, man.
Yeah, we're getting everything we can out of this spring. We got a bunch of spring games coming up this weekend, so more to come. And like Shane said, give us a rating if you don't mind. That really helps us out. We're on Instagram, we're on Twitter. You know, give us follows on there. And of course, the Reddit page, That SEC Podcast. That's our information on all those channels. So that's all I got. Shane, thanks for joining us. We'll see you on the next one.
All right. See you guys. Go Vols. This water ain't cutting it, man.
Oh, shit. Let's do it one more time. I wasn't recording.